Welcome to the bookstore.
It's like a book club, but we actually read the book, or a movie club where we actually read the movie.
Watch the movie?
Yep. Watch it.
That too. I'm Becca.
And I'm Corinne. Because we read Diana Wynne Jones's novel, Howl's Moving Castle, we decided to watch the 2004 Studio Ghibli film, Howl's Moving Castle, just to, you know, see how they compared. And also because, basically, Becca's never seen a Studio Ghibli movie before. Not that I've really seen one. I think I've seen half of Ponyo. So, I watched it last night. How about you?
Yep, I watched it. Well, I watched half of it on Tuesday and then the other half on Wednesday because it was surprisingly long.
It is a two-hour movie.
2 hours long. Yes. Yeah. I'm just not used to that for animated films.
No. I think we were like half an hour from the end and I was like, when is this going to be over?
Yeah.
Not because it was terrible, but because I felt like I'd been sitting there for a long time. Turns out I had been. And also I'd had 2.5 glasses of wine, so I was feeling just fine. So, the movie.
I want to say I did like it better than the book.
Okay, we're going there already.
Which I know, controversial opinion when the movie is better than the book, but I kind of had a clue that I would anyways, because I know Miyazaki is known for his visuals and it's like really unique animation style.
Right.
As far as I know, anybody correct me if I'm wrong. And so I kind of knew like, okay, there's a lot of cool ideas in this book. And it was also really cool to see them on screen.
Yeah. And I also think like the problem that we sort of had with the novel last week was that the world building, like it didn't really take place. So we had instead of like a lot of time put into creating a world that like was then populated with characters, it was just sort of there and not necessarily explained. Not that everything needs an answer, but I didn't, you know, necessarily feel like there was anything built. So the movie obviously has that going on. And then also the movie adds on to it, which I thought was interesting too, because obviously they're not going to be exactly the same. But it was really interesting how there were like flying machines and different stuff like that too.
Yeah, I really liked that just because it made it into a more unique world.
Right.
As opposed to the book kind of feels like just like a general, you know, English town of, I don't know, late 1800s maybe.
Sure. Yeah.
I definitely pictured before cars.
Yes. And there were cars. Yeah.
Yes. It was almost, I mean, okay, I don't know anything about steampunk, but I guess the flying machines, I don't think it's steampunk, but it like reminds me of that because steampunk is always like weird gadgets.
Yeah, because they were like,
and there's always zeppelins.
Right. They weren't quite airplanes. They seemed to have like mechanical wing sort of things going on. So it was like a little bit more of like an alternate version of like an old timey sort of technology that happens to have like flying machines, like dirigibles or something like that.
yes, exactly.
And yeah, I thought, first of all, it looked really, really cool. I always think that the animation style is so interesting because, like, you know, Sophie goes out into the mountains, like, as she's going to the waste to try to get her curse taken off of her, whatever it is she's trying to do. And the mountains look like paintings, you know? But then the cartoons themselves, like, the characters and the animations are, like, super, super simple. I always think that's such a weird contrast. I don't know. It's fascinating to look at because like the backgrounds are beautiful, but then the detail like in the characters is like very simple.
Yeah. That's like, I can't think of his name. The guy who did like The Secret of Nim.
Yeah.
He like left Disney and then did his own thing. It reminds me of that because he did a lot of that kind of thing. Painted backgrounds.
Yeah. Don Bluth. Secret of Nim.
Yes, that's it.
yeah, just to tie that in with what we were saying about the aircrafts, just like the castle had all these like fun kind of, I don't know, like different moving parts and everything, and it was so detailed from the outside anyway, and like the way that it moved and the little pieces and parts of it together, it was just really neat. It reminded me a lot of this video or this game on my phone that I played. It's called Somarost, and like the whole world in that game is There's no way that it's not inspired by Howl's Moving Castle based on what I watched. It was kind of cool.
Yeah, I loved the castle, the outside. I thought it looked really cool. And I also liked the feet. I did not picture the feet moving in the book.
Oh, yeah.
But I like that. It also, because it reminds me of what Baba Yaga's house is supposed to be. She has a house on chicken legs or chicken feet. So, yeah, I just thought that was neat.
Josh hates Baba Yaga. It's like the scariest thing in the whole world to him.
That's why it's so good.
but yeah, so the animation style is cool, and the I liked the way that the world was able to be like filled in a really like easy and interesting way, because like the visuals are there, so you get to see them, and it doesn't take like a ton of like exposition or like explaining to have that happen, and I liked that about it.
Along those lines, when we first meet the Witch of the Waste with the blob men, I thought that one of the complaints I had in the book is that it was like never felt scary. Yeah. Never felt like anybody was in danger. And I can't say that I really was like, obviously I wasn't scared watching this movie, but I did feel like the tension that they're supposed to be there.
They seemed more dangerous than...
Yes, yeah. Exactly. Because I was able to see what was going on and because they added more to it.
Yeah, yeah. And speaking on that, too, another thing we talked about was with the scarecrow, the turnip head scarecrow. In the book, it seemed funny, but like the book tried to make it scary and it never felt scary. But in the movie, it's funny the whole time. And I really like that. I like that it's more of like a helpful character that's just kind of like a sidekick that pops up every once in a while. It fits the characterization like that I felt in the book a lot better, like of it being silly instead of spooky. So yeah, I liked the way it was handled.
He had a turnip for a head.
Uh-huh.
You cannot be serious about this.
I know.
And so I liked how she was like, okay, turnip head, here, hold my laundry.
Yeah.
But it also, well, this is, I guess, about the scarecrow, but he is the prince that's been missing.
The ending.
Which was like, okay. And he turns in back into the prince because of the classic, like...
She kisses him.
She kisses him. Uh-huh. He's her... Or she's his true love. And then, like, the Witch of the Waste, which that is a whole other thing, is like, because Sophie is, like, kissing Howl or whatever, talking to him. And she's like, well, guess she's not really your one true love. And the prince is like, well, that's okay.
I'm just going to go tell everybody that I'm back and to stop fighting the war now.
and then I'll come back. I'll be back later. It's like, okay. That part, I mean, that wasn't taken from the book. I guess it sort of was inspired by the events of the Dog Man in the book. But that, it did remind me of how quickly everything happens in the end.
Oh, it does, definitely. And I think I texted you at some point while I was watching the movie where I said, does this movie make more or less sense than the book?
Mm-hmm.
Because for a while watching the movie, I was like, this is good. This is great. This is like doing a better job of like filling everything in. And then the movie hits a certain point and I'm like, wait, what? Why? What? What?
Yeah.
All over again. I think like there's something in the way that, and I kept trying to remember, and it's only been a week since I've read the book, and I kept trying to remember like why certain things happened or like what the point was or how it all fit together. And I just realized that like, I think that the plot of it is just so convoluted that it doesn't even know what it's doing.
Yeah.
I couldn't remember like what the deal with the Witch of the Waste was, because in the movie it like really doesn't make sense. But
no, I mean, it's really funny, I think. I mean, I will say I don't love the characterization of a really evil person, of course, is also very overweight.
Yeah. I didn't understand why she became nice suddenly.
Well, because she lost her powers.
Okay, yeah.
But then she still wanted Howl's heart, which is from the book.
Yeah.
But I guess, I don't know. She was funny, though. Like, after she lost her powers and became, like, little and, like, a little old.
Well, for a little bit, she seemed like a little old lady who was like maybe a little bit senile, but then she was not again. And I
then she like yeah, that's what I thought. I was like, oh, so she's so old, like older than humans should be.
Yeah,
that she's like lost her mind. She just doesn't have brain function anymore. Right. But then she got better.
I know.
I mean, I didn't hate it because, again, like I said, she was pretty funny. But it just, I don't know what I'm supposed to do with that. Yeah. And I guess we're just supposed to go along with it because it is, like you said, just a fairy tale. Like, things happen.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
Yeah, that was strange. I think this one, because, okay, if I remember right in the book, not the Wizard Suleiman, it's, okay, so the bad guy in the book is the fire demon that the Witch of the Waste made a deal with.
Mm-hmm.
And then it became so powerful, it started taking over her and then wanted to take over Howl, too, to, like, take their powers, right?
Sure.
Okay. So, I think I'm very lost on what the movie was doing because Suleiman was a woman in the movie who was the bad guy, I think.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't necessarily understand what her purpose, like what her goal was.
I mean, it really, I read somewhere because I was looking at it online and that it was sort of, and this could be just a lie totally or a rumor, that it kind of was about Miyazaki's anti-war stance.
Okay, that I can see that because there is a big war going on.
I can definitely see that, and good, I'm all for that, but I don't understand what the war just feels thrown in. I don't really know what the point of that is.
Right, it did kind of come out of bigger story. Nowhere. Yeah.
And that's like Howl's problem where he's actually a bird, a large bird.
Yeah. So that's like what he is. It's not like a curse that was put on him.
I'm not sure. And I will be honest and say, like, towards the end when Sophie, I think, saves Howl, I was not really paying attention. And I know people complain when people review things like, you didn't even read it or you didn't even watch it. And I get that. But the reason I didn't watch it is because I got really bored.
I think that's a fair criticism. I kind of also got lost. This was maybe because I was a little bit drunk. But so, like, I was following along to the point, you know, like, she somehow goes back in time and sees that Calcifer was a shooting star or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't really understand how that related to, like, Howl's whole thing. Except for that, obviously, Calcifer had Howl's heart and she needed to return Howl's heart to him. But I don't know how that had anything to do with him being a bird, unless maybe Calcifer being a shooting star somehow gave him that power. I don't get it. But since we're talking about Calcifer.
Yeah. Just wait, before we move on, I just want to say one thing about Howl as a bird. It was, like, pretty scary when she was, like, walking into the tunnel of his room.
Uh-huh.
And then he's, like, this hulking thing. But then it's Christian Bale voices Howl, and he uses Batman voice.
He's doing Batman. Yeah, he's doing Batman.
And I couldn't handle it. I was like, this is just funny. It's a bird doing Batman
voice. I think I said that. I said, oh, hello, Batman, at that moment. And I watched it with Josh and my roommates, and so it was kind of funny because we every once in a while would make fun of what was happening. I was going to talk about Calcifer.
Yes,
everyone that I was watching it with commented on how funny his animation was and like how incongruous it was with like the rest of the film, but I think he was my favorite.
He was just a smiley face
until the dog showed up. I thought it was very cute, and then the dog showed up, and I was like, what is this weird asthmatic dog with, like, little chicken legs?
I know. Yeah, Calcifer was still great. I really didn't like Billy Crystal voicing him.
Oh, really? Because I loved it.
I just don't like Billy Crystal's voice.
Well, okay,
like,
fine.
Period. But that's a me problem. But despite that, I still really liked Calcifer. And I thought it was hilarious when he ate the eggshells.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. It just was very funny. And I did love the dog, too, although I don't want really... The way the dog squeaked, it just didn't sound like a dog.
I called him asthmatic because, like, he did. Yeah. He just sounded like he was, like, coughing and sneezing the whole time.
Yeah, it was very strange. And I don't really know why the dog was even present.
It was Suleiman's dog, and at the very end, she's, like, looking through something and sees him, and she's like, oh, so you made them fall in love. And, like, okay. That was an answer.
But so is that the whole purpose of the dog even being in the movie, is just to have Suleiman be able to see that Howell and Sophie fell in love?
I'm not really sure. I still don't understand what Suleiman's deal was at all. Like, not even a little bit. Because it just comes out of nowhere. Like, first Sophie's going to see the king, but then she ends up talking to Suleiman the whole time. And so she doesn't even see the king at all. And then we find out that Suleiman was Howell's teacher, but I don't understand what, like, she's after with him still. I guess I probably should have paid better attention, but I'm not, like, 100% sold that even if I had an explanation, it would be satisfactory for me. But I liked Howell's bedroom. He was, instead of him being like, well, the bathroom was disgusting, but like, instead of it being like a gross, dirty room, it was like this weird, magical, crazy place.
Magical hoarder.
Yeah. It was a magical hoarder situation. And every time she went in there, I was like, oh my God, Howell's just a manic pixie dream boy.
Yeah. Yeah.
Especially
the way, like, he's got earrings on, he's got longish hair, blonde hair in the beginning.
It's so... The animation style, and I know, I mean, like, it's probably typical of anime and whatever, but it's very, like, preteen girl dream. Like, very, very feminine and, like, pretty boy, which was sort of funny because I was like, oh my God, it's like a boy band thing, like, come to life.
Yeah, I kind of, like, I love that. It's not for me personally.
No, I just think it's very interesting. I love it.
Yeah, exactly. I love it because I know it's what a lot of, like, middle school girls are into when they first start to be into boys.
Right.
It's going to be not overly hyper masculine boys usually.
Yeah.
And I just think that's cool.
Yeah.
And I like that it, you know, there's a nod to that in this.
Yeah. And also his hair is, like, so super anime.
Mm-hmm.
Everything else, I feel like, I mean, it's all anime, but, like, anime in the way I think of anime, which is, like, this choppy, crazy, you know, like, hair that defies gravity sort of situation. I would say that we have the same haircut and that we have bangs and it's cut at the same length, but mine can't do the things that Howell's does.
I did think that certain things were left out.
Yeah.
And I think he made some good choices
of
leaving certain things out, like the whole whales storyline.
Yeah, that would have been difficult, I think.
The sisters situation.
Yes, I was going to bring that up, too. There's only one sister, and it's much more simplified.
Yeah.
Yeah, there was no... Oh, we didn't even talk about Michael, who in the movie is called Markle, I think. I couldn't quite understand what people were saying.
He was aged way down.
He was, and I loved it.
I thought he was going to be like... I pictured him as like teenage boy.
Yeah, yeah.
Instead, he's like 5.
He was very cute, and I liked it because it didn't have to have like the extra unnecessary love story with one of her sisters.
Oh, yeah.
It took me a really long time, though, to figure out that they weren't saying Michael, and they were saying, I think, Markle?
Markle, yeah.
Yeah.
I watched with subtitles because I do read my movies.
I do, too.
And it was Markle spelled M-A-R-K-L.
Okay. Couldn't always understand what the characters were saying because some of the sound is a little weird. Like, sometimes people sound like they're really far away. So we were making jokes about his name and how it sounded different. And, like, everybody just didn't know his name. And we're like, Marbles. And just coming up with different fake
names.
It's just
a mumble. It's like, Markle. Oh, yeah.
Marble.
He kept in the scene where Howell throws a tantrum and gets, like,
gooey
stuff everywhere, and then Sophie takes care of him. I don't think the whole Sophie cleans and takes care of Howell was as emphasized in this as it is in the book, which I appreciated, but I still just, like, eye roll. Like, no, adult men should not be having tantrums. Sorry.
Yeah. The movie's still... And I want to talk about this because I'm still very confused. I know we went into like Howl's age when we were talking about the book last week, and I am still confused by that because I like the way that the characters talk about Howl make everything seem like it happened forever ago, you know, like he was cursed mm-hmm. so long ago, but he's only like 28. So how long ago was the curse really? It's not like he's been living with it for forever and running away for it for a really long time. And I just, something about that feels really weird. I don't know, because especially because like yeah. the Witch of the Waste seems like she's ancient always. And it seems like it's some sort of lifelong feud that they've had, but it can't be very long. You know, if he was just a student not that long ago. I don't know. I still don't think it jives with, like, what's going on with the rest of the
story.
Yeah,
and I do think that Sophie, when she's young, is still emphasized as really childlike.
Yeah.
So it just makes it very weird.
Yeah.
That they get together.
Yeah.
So I was a little bit confused. Did Sophie, like, slowly get younger as it went on?
So I think that was just, like, the nod to the fact that, like, Howl knew the whole time. Either that or he could see her for who she really was. Because, like, the first time it happens, he's looking at her while she's sleeping, and he sees her as, like, her real age, like, all the way. Her hair is dark. She's not wrinkled or anything at all. Which is interesting because at the end of the film, she's got gray hair, but she's young again.
Right.
So I don't know. But yeah, it sort of like went back and forth. And like as the movie progressed, she stood taller and was thinner and yes. like didn't have wrinkles and stuff, but still
and, like,
had
her
gray
nose
hair.
Was getting smaller.
Yeah. yeah. And I think it was an interesting way to do that, just kind of as a reminder that she was in there the whole time, and maybe as a mm-hmm. like a nod to the fact that like she's gaining more confidence or something. But it was confusing. That is something that like April and Joffrey they both commented on. They're like, wait, is she young again? What's happened? Is that her?
Yeah, it was strange because I think if it was like, okay, Howl is seeing her as she really is when she's sleeping or in times of stress, I would be like, okay, yes, this makes sense. He can see her without the spell because he's falling in love with her.
Yeah.
But yeah, to have it be, losing the wrinkles and the stooped over.
And also, I mean, it just brings me back to how much I can't stand that whole concept. Like that she's, I don't know, that like nobody, everybody knows, but nobody says anything. Or does anything. Mm-hmm. It, like, is that supposed to be romantic to me that, like, Howl managed to fall in love with her even though she was an ugly old lady the whole time? Or what? Like, I find that really offensive in a way.
I mean, the only thing, she really should have fallen in love with the Scarecrow.
Yeah.
Because he truly did love her when she was an old lady.
Yeah.
So I would 100% watch that movie.
Yeah.
Old Lady Sophie and Turnip Head.
I want somebody to make an alternate cut of it where it is yeah. actually just a love story between the two of them while he's just like pogoing around unable to speak with his like floppy glove hands
and got this corncob pipe in his mouth yeah. at all times.
Yeah, I don't understand Howl. I don't think it's romantic at all. I don't think any of it's romantic.
No, I think it was marginally better than the book in terms of romance.
Yeah.
If only because she actually met Howl. Like, they spent more time than a two-sentence conversation together
yeah.
when he, like, saved her and they walked on top of air. Like, oh, I get that. That's like, I can get a fairy tale. People falling in love.
Right, love at first sight situation.
Right.
Right.
But it still just was like, not chemistry. Like, I don't know. I don't know.
Some of it was also just like downright creepy. How about those lines that those soldiers say to her, like in the very beginning?
Oh my
when
gosh,
they stop
that
her
was
in the
so
alley.
Creepy.
And one of them says, I like her better when she's scared, which is like very horrifying.
Yes.
But I think it was supposed to be like maybe a little bit funny, but it wasn't.
But then like Howl comes by and he's like saving her.
Yes.
And I'm doing air quotes. And he puts his arm around her.
Uh-huh.
And I understand that he's saving her, but like you can't just because some guy comes over to save you from two other guys doesn't mean you should trust that guy.
When you're being threatened by two other men and another man comes up and puts his body on your body, that doesn't necessarily make you feel safe.
No. And then is going to go take you someplace alone.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I don't know.
You can tell that a woman probably was not consulted on that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I was kind of glad that they didn't dwell on the hat shop very much.
The strengths in this is that it cut out like a lot of the unnecessary stuff that didn't actually do any world building from the book. Yeah. Like the hat shop and, you know, the sister's situation and whether or not the right one was where she belonged or whatever. Stuff that didn't have anything to do with the plot. And yeah, I do think that cleared up a ton in the beginning. It just kind of veered off the rails about the time that Sophie goes to visit the king. And then that's where it lost me.
Yeah, I think, I mean, in general, I think the weakest parts about the movie were just because they were taking the story from the book.
Yeah.
And I think they did the best that they could. Or
trying to interpret that part of the book, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, I would 100% watch another film of Studio Ghibli, but not this one.
Oh, one thing it made me think of, and this is going to be completely random. Did you ever see a movie in the early 90s called Little Nemo in Slumberland?
No.
No. I was reminded of it while we were watching the movie last night. And so I was just curious because I think it's also a Japanese animator. The story is like about this little kid whose bed like comes to life at night and then it takes him, like it walks through the city and then takes him to this place called Slumberland. And Slumberland is like this big city. And then there's some sort of adventure there. I don't really remember much about it, but some of the scenes like really reminded me of it in a weird way, even though I have not seen this movie in close to 30 years probably. But like the scene in the beginning with the parade and stuff, like that really, really reminded me of it, the way that they were set up. So it was kind of like an interesting, like nostalgic flashback to this thing I barely remember. And that, I think that, but yeah, we had a Nintendo game for it. And I just, every once in a while, will remember it. And I can't remember if it was a real thing or just a dream that I had once or something.
Sometime you're going to wake up in the middle of the night in a cold sweat.
Yeah.
And have to Google it.
Yeah. My bed's going to be walking like over the city and then turn into a boat and take me across the ocean or something.
Oh, that sounds cute.
It was, but I looked up some of the stills from it and it might be really weird and creepy. I can't tell. I was thinking that this movie was even older than 2004, but it's not, obviously, because it's from 2004. But you remember how dark children's movies used to be sometimes?
Oh, yeah.
Like, the Disney was dark sometimes, too, but non-Disney stuff used to get, like, really weird and creepy.
Well, just like I mentioned, The Secrets of Nim, that I know it's based on a book, but that, and I've never read the book, but the movie was dark enough.
Yeah.
There was a dead husband reference throughout the whole thing.
Yeah. Very weird. Yeah. And I think this movie kind of got there with like the bombing scenes, like were very like almost photorealistic looking sometimes, and it was kind of creepy.
Yeah, I will actually, that's one good note. Maybe we should leave on. Maybe this isn't a good note. Actually, never mind. But when they're watching the boat come into the harbor that's on fire.
Yeah.
And Markle is like, let's get closer. We can see this closer. And Sophie's like, no, we have to leave. I've seen enough.
Yeah.
I liked that because it was a really good comparison of somebody who is really young and doesn't really understand what's violence happening
and stuff,
and just wants to see what's going on, whereas Sophie, she's old, she already knows, like, I don't need to see any of this death and destruction.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that was a really good scene.
Yeah, I agree with that too. I think it was a good movie. It was really interesting, and honestly, I think like maybe if I had the time and I would get around to watching it again, it might be.
Man, the prince's hair. I mean, he was definitely hotter as Turnip Head. Let me just say that.
He was. I love it how he's just like, I'm going to go to the next village over and tell him to stop fighting the war.
It's like, I'm wearing this pale yellow bloomers and suit jacket.
Yeah. He He had a much better outfit as a turnip head scarecrow.
Yeah.
did they even explain why he was the scarecrow?
He had a spell.
Okay. Yeah, I suppose that would cover
surprise.
It.
I mean, I guess we already knew that he had a spell, but I don't know if they mentioned who the spell was from.
Yeah, it's so much more complicated in the book, and in a way, like, more interesting in the book, even though, like, it was not explained well there either, but
yeah, whatever. I mean, equally pointless, I would say.
Yeah, yeah. It was like an idea that she had that was cool, but like didn't really do anything with.
That's pretty much it. That's pretty much the movie.
Yeah.
And the book. Okay, so next week we will be talking about My Year of Rest and Relaxation by Otessa Moshfegh. After My Year of Rest and Relaxation, the next book we have is Friday Black by Nana Kwame Adjei-Brenya. That will be March 12th. Then the next one will be My Sister the Serial Killer, and that is by Oyinkan Braithwaite.
Yeah, and so I know a lot of people have read My Sister the Serial Killer and any of the other ones. If you've got thoughts you want to share with us so that we can talk about them on the episodes, let us know. You can give us a call at 616-740-1656. Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
Cool, I did it. And or you can email us at thebookstorepodcast@gmail.com or find other ways to communicate with us through our website, www.thebookstorepodcast.com.
In the Bookstore is a production of Awkwardly Social Media, produced by Becca Young and Corinne Keener. Technical and production support is provided by Josh Bourdon.
And John, if you're out there, thanks for listening.
See you next Tuesday.
Bye.
Bye.
No, it's not boring. It's just I'm really good at falling asleep.